Warning, this podcast has stories of real-life events and true crime that happens every day. These stories may contain adult language and graphic or disturbing details not suitable for everyone. Listener discretion is advised. In our society, most people are content to go through their daily lives safely and peacefully. But our society is not always safe or peaceful. For that reason, some men and women answer a higher calling to defend and protect their fellow man. You probably know someone who is one of these people, or maybe you are one of these people. The ones who see and do the things most people would never want to. These things are sometimes heroic and beautiful, but often they are horrific and terrifying. It's these things they don't share about with other people. It's these things they carry with them, so you don't have to. But when they get together, they talk to each other about them. And they call these stories war stories.
Welcome to another episode of War Stories. I'm Tom.
I'm John.
And we are back for our last episode with Jacob, in our Marines in Afghanistan series. We've taken this pretty far, John.
We have taken it far. But you know what? It's fine because, I mean, I think through the whole series, it's... I think it shed some light on some things that a lot of people, A, didn't know about, or B, didn't understand how living in other countries with other people during a wartime, you know, really is. So it shed a lot of light on a lot of
right,
things.
It did.
A lot of stories came from it.
Yeah, and it's kind of fun to follow the same group through their adventures. You know, usually we get like a little snapshot of a story from, you know, especially for cops, because you're doing it for 20 years. That's what I've heard said is... police work is a 20-year deployment, which, yeah, you know, it's interesting. It's a 20-year deployment, but you get to go home every night. However, you know, it's fundamentally different when you're over in another country and somebody around every corner is probably trying to kill you. So that one, you can't really sleep.
True.
So Jacob's with us, and I hope he remembers how to work his microphone, because Jacob brought some interesting characters. I've had the pleasure of spending a few minutes with them before we started this episode. And these are the guys from, is this India Company is what you're saying?
Yeah, we got a combination. We got three guys from India Company and then Ken from Cat White still. So we got the weapons company representative that obviously they moved around wherever the fighting was. So Cat White and Cat Red just kind of followed us wherever the shitstorm was.
Right. Okay. So essentially, I'm going to go through and I'll introduce each person. And what I'd like you to do is just as I call your name, just kind of tell me how old you were when you joined the Marines, and what year was it, and how long were you in, and what your job was. So we'll start right with Mezzo. Why don't you tell us, how old were you when you joined the Marines, and how long were you in, and what your job was?
All right. I was 17 at the time, left for the Marine Corps about a month after I graduated, turned 18 in boot camp, was in for about 5 years, got out as a corporal, and I was a white man.
Right on. And Chris, how about you?
I joined the Marine Corps in 2008. I was 18. I turned 19 in boot camp. Fuck, was that fun? God damn. Don't let them know it's your birthday when you're in boot camp. But I was in for 4 years. I got out as a fucking private. And
attaboy.
I was in 0311 grunt door kicker. So
what did you do? What did you do? You got in trouble.
Well, fuck, in the beginning of this podcast, you saw me ripping a bong.
yeah, I knew it was going to be
in trouble. So look, check this out. One of our really good buddies, Michael Allen, machine gunner 0331. We got home from Afghanistan October 23rd of 2010. And our boy Michael Allen, our very last firefight, he got a flesh wound, got shot through the calf. And when we came home, as our first sergeant was breaking us for libo, we found out that Allen had passed away in a car accident. So it was pretty tragic, pretty fucking tough times. So what did I do? I went home on leave, smoked some weed, got in trouble, popped cotton, piss test. But thankfully, though, for Gunnery Sergeant Fields, I was able to finish out my contract, my 4-year contract, and I got out with an honorable discharge, even though I got caught for smoking weed. So I'm one of the only, but hey, I don't regret a minute of it.
Yeah, shit happens.
Yep, it does.
Shit happens.
And that's a great, you said it was your gunnery sergeant?
Gunnery Sergeant Fields, yes, sir.
Well, Gunny Fields, you fucking did Chris a solid, and I'm impressed because, you know, there's a lot of sackless fucking leaders out there that don't have the fucking, you know, cojones to stand up for their men. So that's cool.
Fucking right.
And then we have Edward. So, Edward, when did you join and how long were you in? What'd you do?
So I was actually a Navy corpsman. I joined in 2009 at the age of 17. Turned 18 right before I got with 3-7. And literally a couple months after that, went on my first pump. That's a brand new boot.
Right. Well, it sounds like joining the 3-7 alone is enough to get you just sent right out into the shit day one.
Yeah. Yep. Also spent, 3 years as a police officer and detective with West Valley City Police Department in Utah.
Oh, nice. Okay. And then we have Ken. Ken is our last guest for this episode from India. Ken, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
So, Ken, I'm the weapons company rep, Cat White. I joined when I was 17. I was in 3-7 for a while before we did our Sangin deployment. I did our Ramadi 2 deployment, and then the next Iraq deployment, Sangin was my third with 3-7. I'm still active right now. Work at SOI, so still hanging in there. Coming up on 15 years now.
So we have to be careful what you say.
Yeah, you guys will probably have to tell me more of what I would have to look out for after I say it, of course.
Yeah. So if he says something and somebody catches it, just tell us. Yeah. No, you need to cut that part out.
Yeah, cut that out.
HR.
We're all about protecting jobs here, man. We've had people come on the show on numerous occasions that use fake names. They don't want to talk about their department. They don't even want to talk about their current assignment. They'll tell stories, but they're like, nah, I gotta, we pulled an episode because some of the hardest cops or what you would think were the hardest cops in the world heard it and gave this guy shit for saying something that was like him just explaining a term that we used to use back in the day. And they were like, oh, you can't fucking say that anymore. And he's like, dude, I'm almost retired. Just pull it for now. So some people know what we're talking about. Indy Company is Jacob kind of told me that this was going to be a little bit different than some of the other one episodes. And I said, oh, no shit. When we log on to this episode and we get our guests in and the first thing I see is beers and bong rips, I'm going, okay, cool. I get where we're at. I'm picking up what you're putting down. So, Jacob, why don't you kind of explain the relationship of India, Tequila, and Lima, and then you can introduce who's going to start the story, because it sounds like you guys in a 3-7 tradition, you spent a month in, you know, shitty position where you just couldn't do anything but get fucked.
Yeah, essentially. Well, obviously, leading up to that, we've obviously talked about Musa Kalab, Kilo Company's pushing the saying in, Lima's company pushing the saying in. And obviously, we had brought Ken on here. We tried to get him and Happy on prior, but obviously, we've had some mix-up with scheduling and everything else. Like I said, Cat White and Cat Red kind of just got sent wherever we were going to do the pushes because we needed the heavy guns and some of that up-armor support. So at one point, obviously, when Kilo Company reached the river, India Company is across the river. We kind of brought that up with the shadow guys that were shooting guys across the river. We had India Company set up over there, and we actually watched them as they cleared through that village and all the contact they were taking. And we just had shadow guys set up taking out guys as they were trying to flee or trying to maneuver on these India Company guys. So they got set up over there. They were there for a while while me and Ken were on the other side of the river. And then essentially they finally got pulled out, and we thought we had it bad on our side with our beachfront property and, you know, our fresh canal to swim in and all the freshwater crabs and everything else we were
right,
eating.
Right.
And we had our we were pretty good compared to them, because we're looking across and like the green zone ends at the river, and then across the river it's just massive desert again. So these guys are dug in on top of these hills, and it's the sun beating down on them. They're not even close enough to jump into the river because they're up on the hills. And so it was kind of like a funny joke that we'd be like trying to talk to them on green gear and talking shit and just like going back and forth and waving and then doing the whole Braveheart deal where we're flashing them as we're running into the river. Yeah, it was good times. And then like they'd shoot at us. So then we'd run back. but yeah,
I'm going to tell you right now, though, I've heard you say some cool shit in the 8 episodes that we've had going on this series. And by far the most insane thing that you did was trust Afghanistan shellfish to be eaten.
Well, you know, they flooded the canals. We weren't getting food or water. So, and at this point we had gone through dysentery. What's the worst that could happen?
You're like, what? I'm going to shit myself some more.
Oh no. So yeah, we just kind of ate whatever we wanted. And then, we were dealing with our shit on our side of the river. They were up over there. And then, at that point, kind of what we were leading up to there, obviously Cat White gets pulled to go assist with, Lima Company's push. And then, they left two of their trucks, though. I still remember that because they were just dead in the water trucks. So we just kept the heavy guns and parked them outside of our patrol base. So we had those two there that were for show, kind of. We figured that if we just had them out there that they wouldn't bother us. But obviously, we still had some issues with that, especially guys trying to sneak up through the corn. But at that point, Kilo Company kept doing their fight.
Fucking children of the corn, even in Afghanistan.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, exactly.
Come out with some little creepy fucking beard, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. The Sergeant Major Black is using the freaking Raven to spot us if we're wearing Brit shorts or if we're not shaving properly.
Sock check, yeah. Homie.
Yeah, sock check. You know why you got shot? You had
oh, no, now you have to explain that.
Bitch. Who did he tell that to? So at one point, somebody got shot and he came up to him and pulled up his pants and he had white socks on. And he's like, you know why you got shot? You had white socks on, and just walked away. And oh, yeah. So, yeah, that whole ordeal. But at that point, so essentially Cat White and Cat Red got pulled from us. They went and helped Lima out. And then that's when India Company got pulled from across the river, and then they started their push into Sangin, which, knowing what they were going to, we knew it was going to be bad. That's the reason we knew they pulled everybody, and we were just going to kind of be left out on our own, because, what was that, a month prior, two of our squads from Kilo Company had gotten pulled to go on a combined patrol with the Brits to go check out the downtown Sangin area. And we had found out what the fishbowl was, and it was not fun. Essentially, it's kind of like what we called the U over there in the Sangin district, where we walked into the center area and we just started patrolling. We started getting lit up, so we tried to maneuver, but it's just one giant U-shaped deal of buildings and walls where there's no way out but the way you came. It's basically like it's the perfect kill zone. You get caught in that cornfield and there's no way out but the back way you came, and they backlaid us with IEDs. So, trying to come out of there was a bitch. And then obviously the fishbowl, when you walk into that, it's literally high, they have high ground. They have the buildings that they can shoot down at you at. You're essentially trapped in this giant bowl that you can't get out of.
Now, Ken, you're in India and you're getting sent to this. had word traveled and like at this point you knew how much shit you were going into at that, like you're like, okay, fuck, it's just going to be a fuck. That's it.
So I'll tell you from weapons company point of view, what we got briefed was just like for Musa Kayla, where it was, hey, go check out this bazaar at the mouth of these two wadis where they intersect, go check it out and then let us know what you find. Going to Sangin, my task was to find a route to get up there because we couldn't travel on the 611. So, okay, pretty simple enough. I'm the section leader and I'm also the lead navigator in VC. So I'll find a route. That's easy. And we get up there and the giant Sangin Wadi going up the 611 to what we knew to be the Sangin Bazaar. And then the massive brown zone before you get to the green zone, we knew there were going to be IEDs all over the place. The British were there, but as we know, they didn't have the manpower to actually push out and effectively take control of the area. So the green zone itself, since the fishbowl is in the mouth of the Sangin green zone, that's in the brown zone. So when you look down into the green zone, it's just uncontrolled chaos where nobody knows what's actually down there except shit, because nobody really goes down there, and if they do, then you know they get fucked up every time.
So it was a black hole with a sea monster of some kind.
Pretty much. And I remember being the first one to step out into Sangin. It was just my trucks and EOD with Gunny Dempsey out there. And we step out and we're looking into the green zone. We got Inkerman to our west about 1,000 meters, and we're looking out, and then single shot 50 cal coming at us. And like, they're just fucking with us. There's no burst. There's no long continuous burst, let alone, but single shot 50 cal ringing out. And, you know, and Gunny D, if anybody had the chance to work with him, kind of hefty gentleman, he hops out with a DM rifle. Yeah, he hops out with the DM rifle, and we can't see shit. It's just green out there. And that's when you knew, like, this is going to fucking suck. Like, we hear about the Brits, but now that we're here, this is going to suck. We can't see them, and they're shooting at us with the 50 cal. We still can't see them.
Damn. Okay. So, you know, pick the biggest gun that they can, and they're still invisible does not bode well for how things are going to go from that point forward, I guess.
Yeah, was there any type of air support that was going to be some part of plan for this?
So from my knowledge, there probably was, in terms of Brits, if they had it, since obviously them having been there since 2006, they had a support plan. But for us, since it was a recon mission for us to be able to find a way to get up there, the only thing that I can remember, you know, this fucking 10 years ago, was just UAS. It's help trying to scan around us and in front of us as my VICs are rolling. And that's about all I can recall.
So how about any of you guys, Meza or Chris or Edward, as you're getting ready to head this way, what did you know or what had you been told? Don't all speak up at once.
Yeah, fuck it. I'll fucking volunteer instead of being voluntold, right? So my first encounter of Sangin was we were all loaded in 7 tons coming from Leatherneck. And George Kellogg was our driver. And fuck, it was like, I don't know, 7-12 hour drive. I don't know. Something stupid. And we called him Soccer Mom because we had fresh cold Gatorades coming through Sangin. We were loving life. We had shade tent. Like, it was awesome. So right when we got there, we were with Gunner Carpenter and Sergeant Noble. Sergeant Noble dismounted. One of the first people on the ground in Sangin when India came through to dismount. And I don't think we were in town, but like 5 or 10 minutes. And they pulled a IED in the wall, like head level. They pulled it on him, and luckily he didn't get hit. He like rolled out of there, and Gunner Carpenter was looking down at Sergeant Noble like, get the fuck in the trucks. So we pushed across the wadi to the hilltop overlooking the Helmand River as well as PB Jackson. And India 2, which is where all these degenerate fucks are from, Mesa and Ken. India 2, we were on top of a hill all by ourselves. Dug in, biting holes, skeleton holes, sleeping in a graveyard. We were up in the graveyard.
We started digging up bones. Like, because we were fucking digging in fighting holes, and there were fucking bones.
Yeah. Fucking bones, dude. I'm not. Yeah.
Just human remains, like, fucking.
Bro, that's some fucking creepy ass nightmare sometimes, dude. Not gonna lie.
So we had to get, you guys were, water. you're digging just to, like, dig for foxholes, or were they just sitting on top, or what the fuck? Like,
yeah, we were on top. We were fully exposed, so we had to dig foxholes. So
there for what? That was a month, right?
What?
Well, that was the first one. That was the first one. Then they moved us across the wadi. They moved us across the wadi up on top of that hill across Musicala. And that's where we lived for fucking, what, 3 months or something like that?
It was like 60 days. Wasn't that like almost
12 ounces?
I don't remember.
Something like 12 bottles of water a day. We had a ration, and it was fucking middle of
the day. Sharing MREs?
That's the 24-hour ones?
Yeah, yep. Rat fucking MREs. Yep.
So you lived this fucking cemetery for 3 months, like poltergeist style and shit, or what?
Yeah, like that's what we were talking about when they we were talking about the cemetery on the far side of the river on the other village.
Right, I remember that.
So that's where they pushed in then and started digging in on multiple different hilltops and next to the cemetery. And They were more fucked on supplies than we were, because then when we had to go do the BDAs for that HIMAR incident where somebody dropped a HIMAR and then they tried to say we killed like 80 some civilians, turned into a whole national ordeal. BBC was doing a whole report on it. We had to do like, what did it end up being? 8 different battle damage assessments on this one compound. And we had to keep pushing across. So when we had crossed, we found a crossing point at the river. We would sometimes bring these guys treats, like we would come across with like bottled water on top of our head and shit to go drop it off to them. But we were doing those BDAs. First time we got over there to that compound, they had slaughtered a bunch of goats and they didn't even try to hide the goat parts. They just threw blood all over the walls, and the Taliban had taken pictures of it and sent it to BBC saying we killed like 80 civilians. And no, we had just killed like the 6 Taliban fighters, and then they slaughtered a bunch of goats and tried to do the whole propaganda BS.
Yeah, they killed all their girlfriends and used their blood to paint the walls.
I know. It was really a disappointment for them, I'm sure. Yeah, it's just like, God damn it, guys. This
was my favorite
Doc
goat.
Doc Ken is firsthand taking care of a goat fucker. Just ask him the story.
Old drippy dick.
Oh, now you have to. Now we have to hear this, John. We have to. We have to hear this.
This was later on in the deployment when we'd gotten, what was that, PB Campbell. We just took it over for the Brits. And this dude comes up to me. He's this little short Afghan army dude. And he's like, it's hard. We're having to use the translator so that he can tell me exactly like what his problem is. He just keeps pointing down to his junk. So I was like, all right, dude, drop your drawers. Let's see what's going on. And he has this fucking plastic bag that's like a, you know, like you get from the supermarket, and he has it rubber banded around his dick.
Wait, like a grocery bag,
a plastic, like, you know, plastic grocery bag. And so I'm like, all right, take that shit off. His dick is like purple because of the rubber band. And I'm like, dude, you're about to castrate your own dick if you keep this up. But apparently his excuse was, he said he went into town and banged out one of the local girls, which, if you know anything about Muslims, that's a very far stretch to say that he's banging suspect out local right girls.
There. Right. There's only one or two Mia Khalifas in this world, and right? She wasn't in this village.
And so we end up finally, I kept persisting, and he finally told me, you know those goats with the fucking, I don't know, they're Afghani goats have these weird butts that like jiggle It's this weirdest thing I've ever fucking seen in my life.
John, you have to. Is this a thing, John? What is he talking about? I wasn't there, so I don't know.
I don't know. I'm kind of waiting for more of the description. I remember the goats, but the jiggly ass thing.
I'll send you pictures of these fucking goats. But they have these like fat things on their back, and it jiggles. And he's like, "Dude, yeah, I got lonely, and I fucked this goat, and I don't know what I got." And he had
FarmersOnly.com.
He had this like weird sores on his dick. He had like he was dripping out like pus. I was like, dude, I don't know what kind of STDs you get from a fucking goat. So I just kind of like gave him some broad spectrum antibiotics.
Dude, that could have been like MRSA.
Right? I don't know. I gave him some antibiotics and he never came back. So
yeah. So either his dick was fine or it killed him.
Yeah, or he chopped his own dick off and left or something.
That's crazy.
The kid with the tumor, when they were like this kid had a tumor the size of a freaking football, like on the backside of his head, and we're all staring at each other and we're like, what do we do? So the doc, I forget who was that. I think it was either Holder or Belcher, and gave him Tic Tacs. And like take one a day.
That was Belcher. Oh, no, that was Holder. That was Holder.
Prescribed him Tic Tacs.
And we didn't know what to do. So then I know. Like 2 weeks later, they ended up Casivacking the kid to Leatherneck to get the tumor fucking removed. They're like, come back in 2 weeks when we have a plan. But until then, take one Tic Tac a day for the pain. And we're just like all sitting there, like this poor fucking kid has a tumor the size of a football, like. Like he had like a head wrapping and it looked like Harry Potter where the face is on the back as if it was just this giant tumor. And I forget who, I think it was one of the other machine gunners took a marker and started drawing a face on it because they had shaved it. And like, and I'm like, oh God, yeah, here's hearts and minds for you people. But don't worry, the kid eventually got Casivac to Leatherneck and they got the tumor removed. We're good.
Well, yeah, but you're like, bro, aren't those Tic Tacs? And you're like, no, these aren't over the counter Tic Tacs. These are prescription Tic Tacs.
They'll do something.
I did something similar with
purple Skittles.
This kid had polio, and I'm like, dude, this kid couldn't walk. His legs were, you know, just bone. The muscles were gone. And his parents are like, come save him with our American medicine. And I was like, I looked at my lieutenant. And I was like, sir, this kid's got polio. I can't do anything about this. He's like, we'll do something. And so I gave him some ibuprofen.
Right. Well, I mean, at least the swelling went down.
Change your socks, drink some water. Swell.
I know. Well, okay. But here's the thing. Like anybody that's been a cop has heard the stories, and I'm not saying that this still happens, but you go to a domestic and they just need to separate for the night. And so you have them both, you know, put their hand on your badge and you give them, by the power vested in you, a temporary divorce for, you know, two nights, and they put their hand on your badge and you proclaim them divorced for 48 hours and say they have to be away from each other while they're divorced. Oh God!
Indiana cops, where they're on the boats. Yeah, the power vested in me as a captain.
Right. Yeah. Right. Anyway, so you guys kind of knew as you're going. Then it sounds like you know, especially with Ken finding the deep dark pit of despair and sea monsters, where you, if it comes in, it comes out fucked up or never comes out at all. You guys kind of knew you were pushing into some shit like everybody else. Then.
Yeah. Pretty much. You only heard about it at this point. And 3-7, the only real contact we had up to this point, there's a shit ton for us in Musakala with Weapons Company, and Cat Red, Cat White, and a little bit of 81s dismounted, and then Lima Company. And then before that was Washir, just west of Musakala. So it was only stories up to that point, and then very quickly fucking confirmed.
Okay, right. Yeah. Can confirm 10 out of 10 stories are true. So where's the first, I don't know which one of you guys wants to talk about it, but what was the first place you pushed into and what did you encounter?
We pushed after India 2 was over on that Overwatch Hill. We overwatched the rest of India Company push into the town of Doab. And Doab was, I don't know, I want to say east of Blade Hill, the infamous Blade Hill for Sergeant Ahern, calling in his own nine line.
Right.
That's real. That's fucking real. So like, I don't know. I want to say it's maybe two.
What's that, Jacob? Past.
With Blade Hill, we had two of our first sergeants call in their own nine line on that hill. So First Sergeant Krause and then First Sergeant Ahern, like a couple weeks after. Same hill, both of them get hit on it, and both of them are famous for it. And obviously, it's like, that's how great of, they were more concerned about everybody else around them than their own health. That's the reason, like, our chain of command, our first deployment with our first sergeants and everything else, these guys were all willing to do whatever they needed for us. And like First Sergeant Ahern and then obviously First Sergeant Krause, they both did the same thing on the same hill, roughly within 50 meters of where they both got hit at different time periods.
Well, that's fucking a good leader.
Yeah. From the top.
So, Chris, you were saying, yeah, so you're pushing in.
We went into Doab, and Doab, I want to say, was like two clicks east of Blade Hill. And we had we had punched through the green zone and cleared a road. And the engineers had cleared a road. And after that road was cleared, second platoon and third second squad, India second platoon, second squad, and India second platoon, third squad overlooked the, I forget what we called it, LOC, line of communication. Yep, there we go. That was to the Musekela Wadi. So we would have trucks down there on the LOC 24 hours a day, and then they would switch out. And when they would switch out, we would keep overwatch. And a couple times, Taliban, those sneaky little fuckers, would sneak in when the moon dust kicked up, plant an IED real quick, and boom, one of our trucks got blown up. Also, as well as on the down on the LOC, that is where Lance Corporal Newton had lost his life for his country due to sniper fire. He was a third platoon dismount and took a sniper fire. Pretty hard moment to kind of think back on. Being overwatch, you can't really do anything. You're just sitting there. You're just listening to the radio chatter. Listening for kill signs over the radio. And then you guys hear India Sierra, 7484, and you're just, what, who the fuck, whose last name is starts with an S? Oh fuck, that was so and so. So it was pretty hard. The first month we were dug in up in Doab and taking contact, getting blown up every day, every day.
Well, didn't McGee got hit by that same sniper and it ended up going through his cheekbones and it like destroyed his sinuses, but they ended up fixing everything. He has two cute little dimples on the side of his fucking face.
Well, McGee's thing was about a week beforehand because I saw McGee get shot. But again, McGee was being an idiot for that. I still say that's his fault. Because that was...
Wait, are you victim blaming?
Oh, when I see him drop his gear, stand on top of this fucking hill and shout out, fuck you, fuck this, fuck that. And in the middle of shouting, he gets shot through the mouth. I mean, what else can you say?
Oh, no, that's 100% his fault.
Yeah. And I think the funniest thing I heard about that I think Hyatt was next to him after he got shot because he got knocked back. Everybody thought he was dead. Or Hyatt thought he was dead and he just popped back up and fucking Hyatt freaked out thinking, he's like, what the fuck? I thought you were dead. But I think this happened right after Hilt, Ernesto, and Carney, and I think it was Sergeant B got hit with the IED. So it was that same day.
then the corpsman that originally went to treat McGee, it was a second class. I can't remember his fucking name. But he shot the morphine into his own thumb. And then I had to take care of two casualties.
I'm not sure that was an accident.
Hey, that's sick humor right there. When there's right? The fucking mist of chaos, we got these motherfuckers laughing about dumbass shit. Saying, oh, fuck, you shot yourself in the thumb with morphine, you stupid fuck.
So,
best job I ever had. Best
job I ever had. 10 out of 10 would recommend. Like, and it's funny, absolutely. Is this show has actually, we've had kids, even our last episode, we had someone email us. He said, hey, I'm really going to miss you guys for the next, you know, couple weeks. Cause I've been listening to the show for a year now and I'm shipping out to boot camp on Monday. So, and I'm like, fuck, hit us up when you get out. We'll talk at you.
Fucking boot.
He should have got his mailing address so we could have sent him something.
He's supposed to send it to me. He's supposed to send me his address so we can send him some shit at boot camp. So if we get his address, I'll make sure I forward it to you guys.
Hell yeah.
Hey, I'm sure we got some Maker Famous photos we can send him.
Yeah, that's a time-honored tradition of sending people fucked up shit at boot camp, let me tell you, apparently.
God damn.
So, Chris, you're saying, you know, you're talking about being on Overwatch and feeling, you know, powerless because you're looking down on things and, like, you can't get involved because that's not your job, but... I mean, that's one of the hardest things we talk about on the show is when you see something going on and you didn't sign up to sit on the sidelines. You didn't sign up to sit on the fucking bench. You signed up to play the fucking game. No. And so when it's, you know, when it's not your shift and you're sitting out and some shit goes down, it's one of the hardest things in the world not to get involved.
Definitely. I'll never forget the morning that Kellogg and Dryden in my squad got blown up because, like I was saying, with those trucks going down on the LOC, we had some little Afghan punks sneak in through the moon dust and plant an IED in the road and fucking called. I remember calling it in on the radio to fucking First Platoon, retarded First Platoon. They were the cum fart babies of our company. God damn it. Oh, fuck. No, so called it in, and then they're minesweeping, and they fucking miss the mark, dude. Miss the fucking mark. Get back in the truck. Boom. Fucking blow up. And it's just like, God damn it. You guys are so stupid. So our platoon sergeant, Staff Sergeant Hassel, comes up to our fucking hole. Says, fuck you guys, it's your fault. You guys are going on patrol. So sends myself, Doc Can, and 2nd Platoon, 2nd Squad out on patrol to go and find these idiots that had planted this IED. We kind of knew the compound they were coming from. And it was like, yeah, we were fucking pissed off. We were, what was the word? We were belligerent. For sure. We were belligerent.
No. I don't get belligerent from you at all. I don't, that's not. Like, I seriously, I'm sitting here talking to you. I don't know how you didn't promote past private.
Pussies on the pavement, bitches. Fuck. So we end up going out on patrol and then, you know, coming up on some fucking shitheads and. It was an interesting experience. Everything that Combat Hunter had taught us about village elders and, you know, fucking meetings and don't let them touch their feet and shit. And when they touch their feet, that's a bad sign. Like, yep, all of it came into play. Came up on a village elder with some townhead idiots and they were having a meeting for sure, and we interrupted their meeting. They did not like that. And then quickly after we had taken two casualties to IEDs. I want to say within a fucking maybe a 50-yard radius, 50 to 100-yard radius. Doc can. That's when I think he learned how to fly. I've never seen somebody fucking get to you so fast in a time of need. But yeah, man, it's kind of tough to talk about. I mean, it gets me all teary eyed, but, I mean, thank God everyone was able to do their job that day at that time, you know, and it was very busy after that. I mean, we knew who they were, we knew where they were, you know, it was just a matter of creating an operation that was gonna, you know, put us on the offensive side of things. But I think we were in the town of Dilwab for, I don't know, maybe a month, month and a half, dug in some deep holes. And I mean, if anyone else wants to elaborate, but we left it to the Georgians, and maybe 24 hours after we left it to the Georgian army, they fucking got overran by the Taliban. So,
well, I mean, what I was gonna say, I mean, what it expects from the Georgians after they tried to take over for us in Three Kings Pass, and 24 hours after they had a IED underneath a G-boss, and we had to go back on post. So, I mean, that was really expected.
I want to kind of dive back into the Dryden and Kellogg BS. A little backstory. Dryden was my first casualty that I ever took care of in combat as a corpsman. So I was already shitting bricks. Like, I gotta make sure that this shit goes good. Luckily, Dryden's was pretty, he got hit in the back of the neck. Actually, apparently some of the shrapnel was close to like severing his spinal cord. But, then like I wrapped him up, and then, you know what, 10-15 feet later, Kellogg gets hit, and his looks pretty bad. It goes through his cheek, shatters all of his teeth, and comes out the other side. And I remember Louie, like, he calls out Corman. On the second time he calls out Corman, I'm there. And that was, I was at the back of the patrol, and I ended up running all the way up there. I don't even remember it. I just remember Corman running. And
right, the next thing you know, you're Louie. There.
Yeah. I remember I got down there, I'm looking in his mouth, and I'm like, fuck, this is fucked up.
And this is your second one.
Yeah, this is my second casualty. Okay. And I remember Louie, I was like, dude, we got to clear out these chips of teeth from his mouth. And Louie's like, fuck it. He grabs a bottle of water, dumps it in his mouth, spits into Kellogg's mouth. He like shake his head around a little bit. And then we dump out all the teeth. And I think Louie does it a couple of times to kind of like rinse out all those
mouth
teeth.
Mouth to mouth, motherfucker.
Yep.
But what's crazy,
that's a brother right there, though. That's a brother.
We were rationing bottles of water because of where we were at. So we had a full camelback, one full camelback per day. And we were already out on a fucking 10-hour patrol or some bullshit. So I remember literally wasting the last of my camelback water on Kellogg so he can fucking not choke to death on his own teeth. And god damn, dude, you know what he does so after Kella got blown up, the rest of second squad pushed up to our location. Fucking Staff Sergeant Hassel comes with Corporal Carter, aka Short Round.
Oh god.
To the compound that we got blown up from. There was a compound we got blown up from, so they wanted to fucking shoot a lock through it, right? First, Hernandez fucking lobs a 203 grenade to fucking the moon, and who knows where it landed. Probably in some innocent fucking civilian, whatever. So, Carter
probably comes lit up, a donkey on fire, knowing our stories.
Pretty much, yeah. Fucking sent it to the moon and fuck, yeah. So, Carter comes up and anticipates the recoil from the AT-4 or from the law. and boom, puts the round 8 feet in front of him. Fucking disarmed. Yeah, fucking short round. So not only do we have to wait
for is that where the nickname come from?
Yeah.
That's
no, actually I had the name Short Round beforehand because everybody said I look like Short Round from fucking Indiana Jones.
That's time coming up, Dr. Jones. No.
Yeah, that's exactly where it came from.
We're not gonna skip the story of where you threw a grenade on the top of the wall and it just barely bounced over.
Okay, I was 120 pounds with a Thor system. I was 120 pounds.
You guys What's can't up? See. Mesa's got glasses on. Did you have those glasses then, or was this a depth?
I've always had the glasses. Problem?
What the fuck?
No, I've always had the glasses. I was 120 pounds, carried all my gear plus a Thor system. And how tall was that fucking wall? The fact that I even made it across the wall is still surprising.
Well, you made it to America, so it doesn't matter how tall the wall is.
Don't make me cry.
Well, you guys know why there's no Mexican Summer Olympic team, right? Because everyone that can run, jump, or swim is already here.
Something I loved about 3-7 is how like we were the minority, like us white people, like literally. We were like the combination crew that like everybody else was just like, because even out of Kilo Company, we had a handful of guys that like one of them didn't even have like he was technically a legal resident, kind of under somebody else's social.
So it wasn't the 3-7, it was Trece Holmes.
Yeah, it was literally.
Where are the most dangerous?
Yeah. It was literally
only unit in Afghanistan that could fit 25 Marines in one MRAP.
Oh no! Yeah. Oh God. You should have seen when we started doing like a TESOLC after the first deployment. When we started doing 7-ton confessions, where we'd like have 60 Marines in the back of a 7-ton, and we'd start telling like our deepest, darkest secrets of like even little Hernandez, the Spaniards, just like, yeah. Sometimes when you guys piss me off, I just kind of imagine just like in the hooch, just tossing a grenade down and then walking out. What?
That was our Hernandez too.
Yeah. I can't remember how it started, but somebody was talking shit saying his dad sold oranges on the side of a freeway and he almost stabbed somebody.
Wait, was he mad because it wasn't true or because it was?
I think it was true.
It was true.
Well, then we fucking pissed him off worse when we strapped him and we zip tied him to his fucking rack and started fucking with him.
Butt up.
We started fucking with him because he was super homophobic. Like he didn't.
He's
we
from
did
San
stupid
Francisco,
gay shit.
And he's the most.
We did stupid gay shit to
met.
Each other.
But growing up in San Francisco as a straight kid might make you homophobic because you're constantly like trying to watch your ass.
You have to
Here's
be
the
careful
funniest
now,
part
dude.
About Hernandez. Dude, me and him shared the same birthday. I'm surprised he didn't kill anybody.
Yeah. Dude, we did some stupid shit to him.
Well, yeah, for a birthday. So me and Hernandez share the same birthday, 9/5/1990. And somehow I got the easy side of our birthday because they decided to strap him down to his fucking cot and pink belly him with fucking sandals. I think he was bleeding by the end of it.
Come on. We were
Leave
bored.
It to fucking you.
We started course, sticking you... fucking. We started sticking sticks and stuff near his ass.
Wait, why doesn't it surprise me that you guys use fucking chanclas? This is a fucking tactical chancla, motherfucker.
I'm surprised we didn't die. Like, I thought he was going to shoot us all in our sleep.
He was like your Hispanic equivalent of Private Pyle from Full Metal Jacket.
Yep.
Yeah. It's a jelly donut, sir.
Nah, that was fine.
The worst part is this is how we just treated everybody. Like we treated all each other the same way.
No. You mispronounced it. The best part is that this is how you treated everybody.
Like, because
I will say this all the time. I say this all the fucking time, and I'm going to say it again. Racism is not dead when we don't tell racist jokes anymore. Racism is dead when Hispanic people tell black people black jokes and black people tell white people white jokes and white people tell Chinese people Chinese jokes and nobody gets mad. That's when we're not racist anymore, was when we can all laugh about that shit together.
And we had a whole my favorite part is because then we had the Filipino doc on the second deployment, and the funny, that was before the don't ask, don't tell ended. And so we all knew he was queerer than a $3 bill. And then it ended, and he's like trying to be all serious with us. And he's like, guys, I'm gay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No
shit. Bud.
And he's just like, oh, you got, okay. You guys don't care? No. They're booed. Yeah. No. You're good, bro. We love you.
Right.
Well, hey, yeah, no, Marines.
Actually, going back to the don't ask, don't tell, you guys remember Moo from Kong? Oh, yeah.
So you see his Instagrams lately?
Oh, dude, God, that is what a bother.
He's in fucking jock straps.
No, well, I don't know if you know about this one, but you remember how Kellogg used to like running down the halls naked? He liked to show everybody his dick. So yep. he didn't know Moo was gay. And we were back, we were watching the movie a while. We're like, hey, Moo's going to be in there watching the movie, run in there naked and shake his dick in his face. He gave him a fucking free lap dance, and Moo enjoyed it the entire time. You should have seen the look on his face when he found out Moo was gay.
How did he know Moo was gay? Like, everybody knew.
Biggest shock of his life.
Oh, God.
I can still see his face to this day.
We went down the rabbit hole there.
Well, it was down a hole, but I don't know if it was a rabbit hole.
All right. So anyway, coming up here. So I'm going to have you guys kind of discuss, obviously, one thing, though, for this episode with Newton, how we dedicate an episode. Obviously, that was one rough day for these guys. It was kind of the same aspect for us with Patino. Still always remember him. But coming up here, when you guys actually did the push into the fishbowl, coming into there to downtown with Cat White and Cat Red as support, I'm gonna have you guys kind of cover that here.
Yeah, so who's gonna tackle that? Because we did want to discuss when you guys pushed into the fishbowl. And then, obviously, you know, whoever also, as we close out this episode, we want to talk about the push into the fishbowl, and then whoever would like to, we want to dedicate this episode to, I believe it was Lance Corporal Newton. So whoever wants to do that, can do that as we head into our, final stretch.
Right, so that would be the start of Bloody Monday for India, right?
Yeah.
So what I remember is because I was on the mobile section, kind of pushing into it, leading into the start of Bloody Monday. That would have been when Staff Sergeant for First Platoon, this day I have trouble remembering names and everything. Got shot through the Kevlar when it went around. That's exactly how I remember everything starting off for me, because it kind of pretty much led into Bloody Monday for all of India. I mean, it was just kind of a hectic day left and right. To this day, a lot of it just kind of mixes in my head, because that was a start kind of leading into Claire's IED incident with the motorcycle. Yeah. So, I mean, it's basically how it started. I remember everything kind of starting off for us, at least, leading into everything. It was just kind of a mixture of a bunch of different things in one day going back and forth. And to this day, like when Louie kind of and everybody kind of comes along and kind of visits or whatnot, it's just kind of like everybody kind of puts in a different side of how things go in with us. Because, I mean, it's kind of tough to try and go back and remember everything.
Right. It's all a blur to begin with. And everybody has different moments that like burn into their memory. And so somebody brings something, I'm like, oh, fuck, yeah, I forgot, you know.
That happened.
Yep.
Yeah. And that's exactly how it's been for the last, like, actually, I want to say, I think within the last, like, I think year alone, at least over here with me and Lou, we've had a bunch of people kind of stop by throughout the years that have kind of disappeared. And it's kind of been what it's been like, basically a jigsaw for the last, like, year or so. So it's been, 10 years now. And you remember things here and there. Everybody, like you said, everybody has their sides to everything. and you know they kind of piece it together for you, because like everybody else takes it differently. You can't remember everything, and that's how I remember my, like, pretty much everything kind of starting off with Seth Aaron Juarez getting shot, Claire getting that motorcyclist bomber, and then it's just a bunch
of. Tell me about the motorcyclist bomber.
So we started basically another LOC down there after, I think it was a day right after, Bloody Monday. I was on the other end on top of the gun, and they stopped this, motorcyclist. You know, we're checking everybody going in and out, and all you hear is somebody went down. Apparently, when he went to shut off his motorcycle, it went off as Claire was pretty much walking up to him. I don't remember exactly how bad the damages were to him. But I know he got hit really bad over the years. He's kind of slowly been recovering. Same with Seth Juarez.
So he lost, I know he lost an eye. He got shrapnel up and down his body, all over his face. I think he still has shrapnel still in him that they just couldn't remove. No. But I do know that he lost one of his eyes. I can't remember which one. I know he had the Marine Corps Eagle Globe and Anchor as one of his eyeballs.
It's the right eye.
It is, yeah, right.
Yeah, because he's here in Nebraska with me. By the way, don't have him check traffic for you when you're walking to a ball game.
Nope.
That was a bad, yeah.
don't drive with him either. When he was in San Diego, we went down to visit him. And, I mean, the dude paid for everything because he was making a ton of money. He was making so much money from all the, you know, the organizations. Who is that? Anyway.
We had to mute Louie there.
Sorry. No. Hey, so when we're talking about Bloody Monday, Bloody Monday is when Alan got shot as well. Alan was on a hilltop or on a rooftop as a machine gunner and took a AK round through the calf, something like that.
Yep.
And got medevaced out, and that was the last time we saw Alan. And Alan was alive. Like really close, like. So you're talking about India 2nd Platoon. Alan was our angel from above. I mean, guns up, bodies down. And those machine guns save lives. Like, no fucking lie. So it's kind of hard topic because Bloody Monday was hard from the fishbowl aspect as well as, like, India Company. We got surrounded 360. And had to fight our way out of being completely surrounded with JDAMs and fucking 120s mortars. They tried to overrun us. They were within grenade distance. And So Bloody Monday was a fucking.
They were within grenade distance on every side?
Yeah.
They were within grenade distance, I want to say within a 180 in front of us. They didn't complete. They surrounded us 360. But we had the fucking whatever river was behind PB Almas, and they were like 50 meters on the other side of the river. So we dropped some JDAMs, we dropped some 120s. It was an expensive day for the government. We'll just say that.
Yeah, dude, we ran out of ammo. They had to run us more ammo so that we could reload. And I remember, who was it that had us? We fixed bayonets. They had us fix bayonets. Shit. Yeah.
Okay, hey, so check this out. I remember being up on, so the British, when they had PB Almas, they left us these thing called Sangers, which were elevated posts, right? And the British were still with us, and we had their ROEs. So it was like fucking drop ordnance on anything and shoot anything that walks. When we were up there with them, we had dropped their forward observer was running from post to post, getting grid coordinates and just fucking dropping shit left and right.
Mortars, everything.
HIMARS, mortars, 120 millimeter mortars, fucking every JDAMs, everything. And our barrels on our 240s were so fucking hot, we lit cigarettes off of them.
Goddamn.
I do remember that because I ran like 7 cans through a 240 Had to swap out so Carter could get his chance to fucking shoot off a 240. I'm over there trying to fucking take Kirkwood's sock if he wanted to sit in the driver's seat and not do jack shit. And he didn't want to give me a sock. I think I almost got taken out by a mortar that day too. Twice. Yeah. It was a hell of a day.
Yeah, I was running ammo too. I was running ammo too. And then I got to Guzman's position and he was like, Doc, get your fucking weapon up here. So I was like, fuck it. I got up on the hill and that's where I got, I shot a couple people, but probably one of the few corners.
Oh, did you? Oh, was yeah. It like fucking duck hunting shooting or yep. What?
It was, dude, he had a 240 and I was up there with my M4 and dude, there was just, dude, it was a ton of people. Just like you could see him popping out, shooting off a couple of rounds from their AKs. And I remember I got one dude and then one dude in a tree because he fell and he was there for maybe 5 minutes, and then I remember his body just disappeared. Like, he was dead, but his body just disappeared because they had a better Kazovac system, apparently, than we did.
The wheelbarrow? Dude, those wheelbarrows, they freaking spun. Jiminy Christmas. Like, we'd shoot a guy, even in our area, and they did this all throughout the Sangin District. They had wheelbarrows, and they had, like, their whole plan where they would come and, like, have essentially a support system of like the attackers and then the guys picking up the people that got shot. You'd like see them come up. They wouldn't have guns, so you couldn't engage them. And they'd throw the dude in the fucking vehicle. They wouldn't touch the gun because they knew as soon as they touched the gun, we could shoot them. And so they would throw the dude in the wheelbarrow. And we watched them do this numerous times. And it would be like within minutes, they would have somebody over there off ICOM, grab the guy in the wheelbarrow and just run off. It looked like a Mickey Mouse cartoon. It was so, like, literally like, yeah.
So after Bloody Monday, the fishbowl, whatever we're talking about, we were in, Red Air for fucking 2 days after. You guys remember that shit?
Well, even on Bloody Monday, the air was so, the fog was so thick that you could barely see your hand in front of your face. And that's why they fucking attacked us.
It was bloody. So we had Red Air. And so we didn't get to go do a BDA of the fucking JDAM they dropped across the river from us for till 2 days after the fact. And I remember going through those cornfields because I fucking hate cornfields. I don't know how you're in Nebraska still fucking fry. But
I just go with it. I will if I'm harvesting, I don't get out of the combine. I'll pull the combine all the way out of the cornfield, check the combine, then I'm good.
I can't stand cornfields, man. I really can't. Like, the itching, the humidity, fucking all that shit. Nope.
Imagine my dumbass coming back in 2010. And they send me home, and my parents' house is literally tree lines and cornfields.
Fuck, man.
Only guy who gets triggered getting out of his fucking car at homecoming.
It's just like I get home, and I'm like, holy shit, I'm back in the same place. Fuck. All right.
Where's my fucking gat at?
right.
I have my dog.
Yeah.
Fuck. Well, which one of you wants to, because I guess we're going to talk about Newton. And we can also dedicate it to Alan as well, because it sounds like he, even though he passed away, you know, at home, he was the heart and soul to some extent of your unit. So, why don't you guys give us a couple of minutes on those two guys so we can dedicate this episode to them?
Yeah.
Well, I'd also like to put forward Fabry. He was our combat camera. This was during the push. This was during our push into Sangin, into the fishbowl. And I just know we were going house to house. Each platoon or each squad kind of had their section of where they were going. Then you just move forward online. Everybody had to be coordinated, and we'd move forward. Once you cleared one house, you'd wait for the next unit. And I remember we were before the push, we all got together in this one big courtyard. And I remember Fabry and me and him were talking, and we were just bullshitting. And that was the last time I saw him alive. He would go around to different squads and platoons and take pictures. And I know we were pushing through. We'd spend the night. We'd like pretty much commandeer somebody's house, and we would just sleep in the yard. We'd set up posts on top, you know, temporary posts, and we'd sleep the night, push forward in the morning, and just keep going and keep going. And I remember when we heard that Fabry got hit, it was a big hit to all of us, because we were a couple of weeks from going home. We were maybe, 3 weeks from, we were doing our rip. We were about to, go home, and Fabry got killed within a couple of weeks of going home.
And if you don't know, one of his last photos he took before he got killed there, he is actually the combat camera logo now. I'm obviously friends with a lot of those people, with Bobby G, Bobby Gonzalez, and then Zach and a handful of the other guys now.
It's not Mendez. What's his name?
Armando. And then the handful of other combat camera guys I've met through Vet TV and everything else. They talk about Fabry all the time.
On September 13th, and we went home October 20th.
Yeah,
or something like.
Yeah, but
because Fabry was, I think, during the last op before we went home.
Yeah,
and but it's awesome that they the combat camera logo, the official one through First Marine Corps Div and everything, is all about him, and it's awesome how they've done that. It's amazing. And obviously Alan was one of the, it really sucked when we came home, because we lost, 4 guys. Once we touched ground at March Air Force Base, we ended up losing 4 guys within 72 hours.
Something like that.
Salazar got hit by a drunk driver when he went out to the storage unit, from Cat Red. He was one of the first guys I actually met when I came to 3-7. He had come over from a different unit, cross deck, and changed MOSs to infantry, joined us, and he got hit by a drunk driver after he went out to the storage unit on his motorcycle right there on Adobe Road. And then obviously Alan, and then we lost 2 other guys to random car wrecks / stupid bad luck. And so, yeah, it was even though we were back home, we felt like, well, this isn't going to end. And then obviously since then, we talked about Mike Rowe, Hebert, Palazzoa, all the rest of the guys we've lost since then. And it's been one deal after another. But luckily for us, we've all kind of, as a unit, we've all kept in touch with each other. And that's one thing that, and then obviously Ronnie Alexander really helped out. Ken, me and him were talking about that here this last week. He wrote that book, Blood, Sweat, and Fears, that covers a lot of the deployment. And that's part of the reason we were doing this podcast, is to help bring light to more stories other than just in the book. And the book does a great job of describing everything. And now we're working on doing a full-on documentary, kind of like what they're doing right now with The Gift, all about Corporal Jason Dunham. With the Medal of Honor deal that they're going around the country doing that whole deal. It's called The Gift. Check it out. First Medal of Honor recipient since the Vietnam War, Kilo 3-7. It's going to be a very touching deal. And that's what we're trying to do is, I always say, the dead are never gone, truly gone, until we stop speaking their name.
Then we need to speak their full names. So we have Fabry, Allen, Newton, and Salazar. Let's give their full name.
Also Bailey too, considering he was from India.
We talked about Bailey.
And Patino. If somebody can, if they can give us the full names and ranks of Fabry, Allen, Newton, and Salazar, and then if you want to add anybody else, we'll dedicate this episode to them.
Lance Corporal Michael Allen, 0331 machine gunner from Bakersfield, California.
And then we have Fabry, Newton, and Salazar.
Fabry was a Lance Corporal. I don't recall exactly where he was from. I think he's from Pennsylvania.
Lance Corporal Ralph Fabry. Combat camera.
And then
you have Lance Corporal Robert Newton.
Bailey was Corporal Michael Bailey.
He was Corporal
yeah, Michael Bailey. That pissed me off because they didn't promote. He was supposed to be a corporal long before he passed. And he was a chief petty officer in the Navy before he went to the Marine Corps.
Yep, we covered all that. Like that.
Okay, sorry, that, my dude, bad.
Yeah, no, you're good. No, it's okay. Funny because I love that part of his story about how he was a staff NCO in another branch, and he's like, "Nope, I want to go fight and I want to fuck shit up." And oh god, fucking amazing individual, true warrior, and just freaking had that heart of gold, like where he would do anything for anybody and bend over backwards. And yeah, like talking to Doc Wagner, like we talked about, like same thing. Our corpsmen, they were.
Talked to Wags.
Oh yeah,
Wagner loves the cop.
Yeah, Wagner loves the cop.
You gotta send me his info.
I'll send you his number, dude. Yeah, like, and Ken can contest to all that. Like, especially like with the group of people we had, from corpsmen to staff NCOs to NCOs. Obviously, like I'm like Ken's super boot, or sorry, grand boot, technically.
Grand boot, I like that.
Yeah, grand boot. Yeah, and it was just like we had these just amazing NCOs. We had guys that were willing to teach you anything.
You got Ken over here, a salty super senior.
Yeah,
still in, crushing it. 15 years later.
Like I said, like making us look bad. Because then you got, and then on top of that, like my favorite part is when him and Day had their reunion. Good old freaking Joe Day shows up for the second deployment. And he was back 3-7 old days, but that was my favorite part about Gunner Carpenter. He had been 3-7, like Gunner Carpenter. If you look him up, that guy is just freaking legend. Like, he's retired now and everything else, but he basically went through the whole everything through Iraq and then became a gunner and then literally the god of the
infantry. He was enlisted, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He was.
Dude, I talked to him recently. He's a friend of mine on Facebook. The dude, like, I called him up. I was drunk, feeling in my feelings and bullshit. He fucking sat there and talked to me. The dude is fucking still.
That's a
solid
brother. Again, that's a brother. Yeah. Well, for Corporal Bailey, Lance Corporal Fabry, Lance Corporal Allen, and Lance Corporal Newton, we dedicate this episode to you, and we've got it from here. Does anybody have anything? I mean, this has been a long, great series. John and I have super enjoyed it. Jake's been great bringing you guys to us for this. We just wanted to make sure we gave him kind of an open-ended carte blanche to bring people in to tell your story, because, you know, just we've only covered probably a piss trickle of what you guys have actually been through, and it's taken us 8 episodes to do it. So we really appreciate you guys coming on, but I wanted to give every one of you guys the chance, if you wanted to just say whatever you needed to the rest of the guys in your unit that might be listening or maybe need to hear something that you haven't said yet.
Honestly, Bill, I want to say thank you guys so much for having us and letting these guys, I know, bringing all these different degenerates and everything else on.
Yeah, this one's the most degenerate by far, but it's been fun.
I appreciate it. No, thank you guys so much. Obviously, like everything we've been through, I just consider all of them brothers always constantly, that I'm just going to keep working towards getting everybody together. Obviously, for all you 3-7 guys, we are planning, I am working on the next reunion that we're going to do a full-on one here in 2022, hopefully, pending on dates, to give everybody time so we can all get together and be happy again, because nothing was better than the barracks parties back in the day, whether we were fighting, drinking, or just shooting the shit, or competing against each other. But honestly, it's been one wild ride. I love the fact that everybody's hamster is getting turning up there, because I know some of them went to sleep. But it's great that we're getting all these stories put out there and honoring these guys that we're all still here for. That's the whole point, is like, it's like the famous quote from Saving Private Ryan. When you look at your life and everything else, earn this. And so we're all continuing to do the good fight and looking forward to what's to come here. Hopefully, like I told you, we're going to get this full on documentary going. So definitely going to invite you two to the reunion and be part of everything, just so you can meet everybody in face.
Well, that's awesome. Thank you.
I think it'll be some prime entertainment for you. But
well, no, I don't know if you guys know this, but I posted on our social media, Nux for Life, and Corporal Patino's family personally contacted me and, sent us some of their glasses with the bullet hit
and the
Corporal Patino Nux for Life logo with the brass knuckles. So that was super, super appreciative of that. We really appreciate, you know, that little gesture, because we were just trying to pay tribute to him. But they, you know, a couple of comments were, it was hard to listen to, but we're really appreciative for it. So I just wanted to mention that John and I are both grateful for them, you know, sending that to us.
Well, you guys made it available that we were able to tell that story, and we can't be thankful enough. And thank you guys for everything, and I'll let you guys take it from there. Ken, I know you said you had something.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to say thanks for having me, man. It's good to get together with the guys. I know after Brewer passed, a lot of us started reconnecting. And that's a good thing, dude. I've been some of these guys I haven't seen in, you know, 10 years. I recently did a trip down to San Diego and got to see, you know, Louis, Savvy, and a couple of the other guys, and Louis. And so it's good. It's good to reconnect. Jake, I'm planning on coming out to Nebraska. I need to see you and Hild. So
damn straight. Yeah. Well, we got a whole crew of the 3-7 guys, Children of the Corn out here. We got everybody.
Yeah. We got Obi's out there too.
We even got Obi-Wan Kenobi out here.
Yep.
Oh, Kenobi.
Yeah, buddy.
I know he's a
fucking
cop.
Jedi.
He's a cop. Isn't he with Lincoln or some one of the police departments out
there?
He
was with Douglas County Sheriff's, and then he was with Omaha PD, and then now he's currently he's back working for his dad's business now.
Okay. I know I was trying to trade patches with him, but bitch never answered me. So.
Well,
Jacob, Darth Vader.
Real quick, I just want to say thank you. Different stages in life, man. 10 years ago, we were fucking young, dumb, full of cum, fighting towards fucking the line of fire and just charging the hill and not looking back. Today, I'm a happy father. I got a young family. I'm just really grateful that I was with you degenerates to fucking keep me alive and give me a good opportunity to be a father and have a family. Hey, man, I don't regret anything that I did. And anybody out there listening, if you guys are having hard times, hey, you're not the only one. Fucking reach out. There's some dumb idiot you can laugh and get drunk with and drink tequila and fucking laugh about stupid barrack shit and all that fun, dumb stuff. So, hey, thanks, guys, for having me. And you guys, I look forward to what's the future. And we're going to be in the history books fucking one day. Hopefully, they're looking at our stories and staying in Afghanistan and making movies about it growing up. Like, we watched Saving Private Ryan and bullshit like that. So,
yeah, and you'll deserve it. Well deserved. And Ken, Jacob said you had something you wanted to say closing out?
Okay. I mean, I think for myself, the biggest thing I can say still being in is I have the opportunity to see how everybody is and how they turn out once they leave the Marine Corps, the Navy, and working with the Marine Corps. The biggest thing I can say is stop fucking posting about 22 push-up bullshit. Actually pick up the phone and fucking call somebody or go to their damn house. You know, it doesn't make sense that we have to plan a reunion a year and a half away to give people time. How about we stop fucking making excuses and go and link up? You know, it just doesn't make sense to me. It was super easy. There's like 7 of us here right now. If we make it a physical deal to where say, hey, be here at this time, maybe people come, maybe people can't. But if you pick up the phone and you call them, hey, I need you to be here with me, more people will probably come. And if you are calling them, you'll probably find out, hey, are they hurting financially or does they need somebody to watch their kids? Figure it the fuck out and link up, because your stupid little hashtags don't mean shit. Call somebody.
Yeah. You know what, Jacob? That's actually, it gives me a good idea is why don't you and I see about planning a virtual reunion on Zoom?
Okay.
And we can do like a Q&A. We'll get you get the panel of people. John and I will moderate it, and you and Pressure Plate Patty and Louie here and Edward and Ken or whoever you guys want to have, we'll have a panel of people, And then we'll open it up to all the other guys in the 3-7 to just watch and be there virtually. If you guys want to try and do a virtual reunion, we can see if we can make that happen and host it.
All right. Yeah. Let's get it going. Yeah, I'm dead completely game for that.
Right. Well, you pick your best 9 people, and John and I will be the other 2 to round it out for an even 12. And we'll John and I will host the panel.
All right. Game. We'll get it set up.
Real quick, guys, I know I kind of stay quiet most of the time, and usually throughout the series, I kind of stayed quiet because I like to listen to your guys' stories. I was there at the same time you guys were, so it just kind of brings me back, and I just like to listen. But, you know, every time, you know, I've seen my share of combat, but every time I hear you guys and other people talk about their stuff, it's absolutely humbling. And, you know, I just appreciate you guys just kind of having no filter and doing your thing and just speaking the truth. I appreciate it.
Well, I certainly echo that. And since John said it better than I could, I'll just say, until our next episode, come home with your shield or on it.